ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's quiz time. Please answer yes or no to the following. You have at least one recurring meeting on your calendar that's developed into group therapy instead of real work. In the past month, you've DM'd to roast a meeting in real time with other hostages. In the past month, you've sat through someone reading their slides out loud in a meeting like it's story time in kindergarten. In the past month, you've handed out action items knowing it would take a miracle for anyone to actually do them. In the past month, you've attended a check-in or status update meeting where nothing had changed since the last check-in. Diagnosis. You're experiencing a full-blown meeting crisis. This is an emergency. Please break glass and listen up. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong with ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. I'm sorry to hear that you're a full-scale calendar casualty, and just insisting on a meeting agenda isn't going to cut it. You might be in need of a full meeting doomsday. Rebecca Hines is an organisational expert, and she's helped dozens of organisations across industries and continents fix their dysfunctional meetings. Her new book is called Your Best Meeting Ever. Rebecca, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
Now, on LinkedIn, I asked for meeting horror stories, and this is Faye. This is not her real voice, but it is her real story.
When an entire national team of 40 to 50 people must attend an hour-long meeting every month on Zoom, where every level in the organisation had to contribute, it always seemed like a sinful waste of productive time, not to mention financial cost, to most of us. Especially for those at the coalface who were always the last to speak and itching to do real work. It was such a morale killer too.
Thanks so much, Faye. Does this sound familiar? Rebecca, it's a horror story, but unfortunately it's a pretty common experience, isn't it?
It is, and so often we use meetings as information exchange mechanisms when we know meetings are the most important product in our organization. They're also the least optimized. And so for just using them for information exchange, to give status updates, to brief the boss, it's a very inefficient use of our time.
A lot of meeting advice insists on having a meeting agenda. It's like the 101 of meetings. Mm-hmm. But you kind of think that this doesn't cut it.
It's fascinating that there is no real conclusive evidence that having an agenda actually improves our meetings. And that is because it's not just about having the agenda, it's about how we design it. Similar to, it's not just about having the meeting, it's about how we design the meeting. And so one of my favorite strategies is to frame every agenda item as a combination of both a verb and a noun. Because what that does is it ensures you're very clear on what exactly you need to do in the meeting. So rather than, you know, Q2 budget discussion, specifically say the verb, align on the Q3 budget. What are you trying to do and what are you trying to accomplish? Because that not only gives you as the organizer and attendees clarity, but it also helps you understand when you can move on to the next agenda item.
The basis of your approach is design thinking and treating meetings like a product. Can you explain this?
Meetings are the most important product in our entire organization. They're where decisions get made, alignment gets set, culture gets built or broken, and yet they're the least optimized. And so if we are going to treat meetings like a product, we should be applying the same product design principles that make great products great to our meetings. And so that ranges from metrics. We should be measuring our meetings given how much time, energy, sanity they consume, just as we would products that we sell to our customers. You know, we should be designing our meetings for the attendees in the room, our users of the meeting, not us as an organizer. Innovation is another big one. We should be constantly innovating, iterating how we design meetings with technology rather than clinging to the status quo.
And I just want to pick up a point that you made about the return on investment, because this is quite interesting. I know that a number of companies have actually tried to put a number on it.
So this is what I call a shock metric. This type of metric, and I've seen countless companies either calculate it or actually build it into the calendar such that when you schedule a meeting, it pops up what is the time and cost associated with the meeting in terms of salaries. What that does is it helps people jolt out of the status quo. It gives them some indication of just how expensive this meeting can be. But it doesn't do a lot to fix our meetings. It helps us understand we're in a lot of them, they're expensive, but it doesn't indicate, you know, how valuable are those meetings or how can I fix them? And that's why in the book, I recommend return on time investment. So it's a simple 0 to 5 scale. After about 10% of your meetings, ask attendees, was this worth the time you invested? Because what that does is it gets people out of this natural knee-jerk negative reaction to meetings, and it level sets in terms of our time, because we all have an intuitive sense of the value of our time. And then a follow-up question you can ask is, what could I do as the meeting organizer that would enable you to boost your rating by 1 point? So you're getting some actionable feedback as well.
So is the starting point then, if someone's feeling really overwhelmed by their meetings and they need somewhere to start, is it pretty much an audit? Just look at the meetings you have and do some sort of analysis on it. And I think you use impact versus the sort of ease. Do you want to go through that? Is that the sort of starting point?
It is, in terms of impact versus effort, is often a good, you know, two dimensions to look at your meeting. So impact, how effective is this meeting in helping you achieve your goals at work? And then effort. So both considering the time spent in the meeting as well as the pre-work and the follow-up, how much effort is entailed in that? Now, we've done a lot of work to understand, is a meeting audit really the best mode of operation here when our calendars are overwhelmed and overflooded? And what we've actually determined is a meeting doomsday, which is a complete cleanse of the calendar, tends to be much more effective, because when we're doing a meeting audit, which is our natural reaction, we're evaluating meetings one by one, but they're still on the calendar. And so we're in the habit of defending those meetings that are already on our calendar. Whereas if we do a doomsday, so this is a 48-hour reset of the calendar, you're wiping off your recurring meetings for 48 hours. What that does is it allows you to start fresh. It eliminates some of the social guilt we often feel due to canceling meetings or declining meetings. And it starts to reset our assumptions about what actually deserves to be a meeting. So that is my recommendation. You know, it's a bold move, but it's such a simple, you know, 48-hour activity that can do a lot of long-term good for us.
So everyone should really do a meeting doomsday, because it's from the starting point that you can actually rebuild. It's what you're saying is that in the research, it's actually too hard to go the other way.
It doesn't do as much good if you're defending the meetings that already exist. If you're wiping the slate clean, it gives you that permission and others' permission to reset. Ideally, you're doing this as a team or an organization, but even as yourself, you can start to, you know, think about, how would I cleanse my calendar using such a doomsday approach?
We'll do the doomsday in just a minute, but I know that in Dropbox, they had something called our meeting yedden.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to say. It's very clever though. So what happened?
So this was the precursor to meeting doomsday. So in many ways, this is what inspired the concept of meeting doomsday. And our meeting get-in, essentially what Dropbox decided is, like many organizations, employees were overwhelmed by meetings. They were drowning in meetings. And so the IT team at Dropbox decided they were going to flip the switch and delete everyone's recurring meetings overnight. And there was actually a 2-week period where every day, if an employee had added back a meeting to their calendar, the swipe would happen again that night. And so it was this complete reset. Employees felt such a sense of relief. They loved it. They rallied around meetings as the enemy. But you know, the reason why I don't recommend this top-down purge is because employees don't often feel like they have complete ownership, right? They're often blindsided. This purge comes, they haven't been involved. They haven't been involved in deciding which meetings to cut or keep. And so the meeting doomsday is very intentionally designed to put control and put autonomy in the hands of employees, because we know that you're much more likely to stick to something. It's sometimes called the IKEA effect, right? If we build something ourselves, we're much more likely to stick to it and value the outcome.
Let's do the meeting doomsday. On your website, you have a meeting doomsday quiz, and you can diagnose your calendar activity. We had a few of them, a few of the questions at the top of the show. Do you want to talk us through what the quiz is trying to do and give us a feel for those questions?
Sure. So the quiz is essentially giving you a gut check into just how badly you might need a meeting doomsday. And a lot of the questions have to do with habit. You know, how much do we just accept the default on our calendar rather than really intentionally design our meetings? So often that comes in the form of legacy meetings. If your meeting today, your calendar today looks the same as it did 6 months ago, more or less, it's probably an indication you're not consciously intentionally designing it. If you're defaulting to 30 or 60 minutes all the time, right, that's what our calendar tells us should be a meeting. It's not necessarily what actually should be a meeting. And so a lot of these, you know, we go through the motions in scheduling a meeting. We show up, we know it's going to be a waste of time, and yet we continue to go through the motions. The meeting doomsday and the quiz in particular helps you get a sense of just how bad is that legacy debt, is the status quo, and how badly do you need a meeting doomsday? How effective might it be for you and your organization?
Who's involved with the meeting doomsday?
Ideally, it should be organizational wide. Ideally, you should have some leadership buy-in. And it's also important to have what I call, and my colleague Rob Cross calls, energizers, right? You want this to be fun. You want this to be high energy. You want people to rally around meetings as the enemy, right? It's not the person who scheduled the bad meeting that's the enemy. It's meetings as the enemy because they're taking up so much of our time. Meetings should earn our time. And because of that, you need the leadership buy-in to, you know, convey that this isn't just another change effort that, you know, is more talk than action, and the energy around, you know, rallying around meetings as a movement and fixing meetings as a movement, not a mandate that's done top down.
What is the purpose of a meeting doomsday?
The meeting doomsday is specifically focused on those recurring meetings, because that's often where the legacy meeting debt lives by definition. You know, if we have meetings that happen on a recurring basis, typically that's where most of the debt would pile up. Importantly, though, it needs to be the employee that's buying into this, right? It needs to be the employee that's evaluating which meetings do I bring back and which meetings do I permanently delete. So the idea isn't that you're deleting these meetings permanently. It's you're assessing which ones should I bring back. And even for the ones that have some value, how could I redesign them to be most effective? And Lisa, it's fascinating. What we see is there's a lot of time savings as a result of these doomsdays, but most of the time savings actually comes from the redesign rather than the deletion entirely. It's about, you know, 30 to 70% in the doomsdays that we've run, 30% of the time savings come from that full deletion. 70% tends to come from the redesign, making that 30-minute meeting a 25-minute meeting, or the monthly meeting a quarterly meeting, or the six-person meeting a three-person meeting. All of these small changes really do add up.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and we're speaking with Rebecca Hines, author of Your Best Meeting Ever. And stay with us to get more tips from Rebecca on how to manage your calendar in Try This, and find out how to get your own copy of Rebecca's Meeting Doomsday Checklist. Do you want to talk us through some of those really important stages in the meeting doomsday? In particular, I love the rallying cry.
This is such an important part of the doomsday, right? At the onset, so much of this is planning. You know, unlike the army to get in where blindsided employees, this is all about planning. How can you ensure that you're articulating a vision of a better future, a better meeting culture to your employees? And part of that is a rallying cry. It's positioning meetings as the enemy. It's creating this collective momentum and movement around, we're doing this together because our time is more important than what we, you know, are supposing it is, given how we treat our meetings. Our time is our most valuable asset, and collectively, we're going to take steps to reclaim our time from bad meetings.
Okay, so we've rallied, and then what happens?
Well, and then after you've rallied, you explain very clearly the steps of the doomsday. So here's what we're going to do. It's going to be a complete calendar cleanse for 48 hours, those recurring meetings. We're going to do it probably on a Monday or Tuesday. We're probably going to do it after, you know, a intense period where there's a lag in work activity so that, you know, it's not incredibly disruptive for employees. But we're going to lay out really clearly what's going to happen over the next 48 hours and then give people advice and guidance in terms of how do they assess their meetings. And that impact versus effort is one way to do that that is often very effective.
Any tips at this stage from things that you've experienced in rolling this out?
Excuses will always pile up. Excuses, you know, I've seen excuses about, I have too many meetings to participate in the meeting doomsday, right? And it's very important to also, you know, articulate this is a company-wide or team-wide initiative that we're going to commit to. And even if that means short-term, our work might suffer in one or two meetings that are incredibly valuable, this is a long-term game that we're playing in terms of reclaiming our time and creating a better meeting culture.
Okay, let's say that we have cleaned our calendar and it's time to rebuild. I want to create a meeting. Talk me through some of the best criteria that makes a meeting just beautiful to you.
It's a great question, Lisa. And often I'll think first about the four key dimensions of the meeting. So the length, what is the length of the meeting? Often we default to the 30 or 60 minute meeting. We know that meetings tend to suffer from what sometimes called Parkinson's law, meaning work expands to fill the time allotted. And so if we give a meeting 30 minutes, it's probably going to take 30 minutes. So often I'll advise folks, you know, if you think a meeting deserves to be 30 minutes, try the 25 minute meeting or try the 15 minute meeting, because that really forces you to be judicious about what actually deserves the meeting time. And you might end up cutting too deep and you might realize that, hey, we can't do this in 15 minutes. But it's only really in that moment of cutting too deep that you truly recognize what actually deserves meeting time and what is often dead weight. So length is a big one. Cadence is another one. So thinking about, do we need that weekly meeting? Do we need a recurring meeting? Do we need a pre-meeting before the meeting? You know, usually we can get away with less recurring meetings and less frequency in terms of how they're recurring. Attendees are another big one. We tend to over-invite. We tend to invite spectators rather than the stakeholders in the meeting, and being very clear that every attendee that is in the meeting has a clear purpose within that meeting, and no two people should have the same purpose. And then the other big one that we've talked a little bit about is the agenda. So what does the agenda look like and what are we trying to achieve in the meeting?
Picking up on attendees, is there like a number where it's way too unwieldy and actually it's nearly an automatic no?
There's consistent evidence that once we get above 7 or 8 people, a whole host of negative consequences tend to kick in. We start to see social loafing, people feel less accountable for the outcome of the meeting. We start to see multitasking, especially in virtual meetings, spike as you add more and more people. And so the fewer the attendees, the more effective the meeting is going to be, in large part because people feel more engaged and people feel a greater sense of ownership.
What are some alternatives to meetings if we're looking at filtering out some of them?
Video is a great one. Something like Slack or an asynchronous tool is also very effective. But the key there is it needs to be clear to employees, what is the purpose of this communication channel? What do we use for updates? What do we use for announcements? When do we send communication through a direct message versus signal to the entire channel? All of these norms are really, really essential in terms of helping employees understand where the work should live. And then ideally using meetings as a last resort, a very important last resort, but a last resort.
And then who gets to decide whether or not a meeting is added to the calendar?
Well, unfortunately, we have a very low bar, which is part of the problem. This, you know, a lot of the premise of the book is focused on we need to raise the bar for what actually deserves to be a meeting. And so, unfortunately, we operate in workplaces where anyone can put a meeting on the calendar. Usually it's the managers and usually it's the executives. And in particular, we see disproportionately the new managers. The new managers tend to deploy meetings with a significant frequency because, again, there's this misconception that holding a meeting is a sign of leadership. It's a way to surveil your team, often micromanage your team. And so we tend to see this natural knee-jerk reaction once someone has stepped into a position of management for the first time, over-indexing on meetings.
How do you stop meetings creeping back in? Are there guardrails you can put in?
Yes, and lots of guardrails, both at the individual level, the team level. I love using technology as a gatekeeper because it reduces the onus on the human. And so I've worked with numerous organizations where they'll build in certain checks and balances to say, if this happens, then the meeting isn't allowed to be scheduled. If there's no agenda on this meeting where we know an agenda is going to be valuable, we're going to auto-delete it off the calendar. Or in one organization I worked with recently, if half the attendees haven't accepted the meeting invite 24 hours in advance, it's automatically deleted. And so what this does is it helps to take the onus off of humans to make, you know, often risky judgment calls in terms of their reputational risk or, you know, their relationships with other attendees, and puts the onus, sometimes puts the blame on the technology.
So each week, we actually ask our guests to make a suggestion to This Working Lifers that they can use to experiment with during the week. They do a mini sprint and it's called Try This. So Rebecca, can you give us some scripts, please, that we could try this week to politely decline any low impact meetings?
So what I often find, and this is highly dependent on the level of psychological safety within the organization, you know, depending on your position within the organization, depending on the culture, you can be more or less explicit in terms of calling out a bad meeting. In the worst case, where, you know, you're an individual contributor, you don't feel like you have enough confidence to speak up and push back against the bad meeting, framing your suggestion in terms of curiosity can often be very effective. So something like, thanks for including me. I'm wondering if we could try to solve this over email instead. There's a second one here. I've been in so many meetings lately, but I'm trying to be more disciplined about my schedule. Could we try to solve this without a meeting first? And then the third one, I'd be happy to give you feedback on that. Before we schedule a meeting, could I review it in a shared doc?
And Rebecca has very kindly shared her meeting doomsday quiz and the meeting doomsday checklist as well. And if you write to us, use the email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. We will email it to you. Thanks so much, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rebecca Hines is an organisational expert and author of Your Best Meeting Ever. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Elise Simons on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast. Share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.